All right, we are recording another episode of the That Chapter podcast straight out of our vocal cords into your eardrums. How's it feel? Hopefully good. I don't know what else to say. But yeah, hey you and welcome. My name is Mike and I am joined once again by my, I'd say you're a co-host now. Yeah, you've been on every episode. You're just giving yourself a co-host title. Okay.
It's on my business card already.
All right, fair enough. Joined once again by Keith. Now, the folks at home are always asking, when are we going to see Keith? When are we going to see Keith? When's he going to appear? Just so the folks don't know, Keith is not an internet person. You have a real job.
I do.
Unlike me, who has a make yippie job where I make YouTube videos for a living, you do not delve into internet dumb at all. You don't have a Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now. You don't have a Facebook. You do have an Instagram, which you do not use. In fact, you only use it to follow two artists.
I follow one tattoo artist. The only reason I follow her is because I was getting something done off her and it's the only way she communicates.
Okay.
So I had to get an Instagram to communicate with her and send her references and stuff. So the only people I follow on Instagram is her, my wife, and you.
Oh, thanks.
That's it.
Okay. So yeah, you don't have your own YouTube channel or anything like
that.
And
I only use it to send you funny memes.
Yeah.
Which you never respond, by the way. I send you so much funny stuff.
You do? I never check my Instagram.
You should. I
don't even know how to check my messages. But okay, I'll check it out. I'm sure I'm missing out on some real knee slappers over there. So yeah, so if you're looking for Keith on the internet, you won't find him. Oh, the only place, this is that chapter exclusive.
Yep. you have the full rights.
The full
to
rights
me.
In perpetuity for Keith. I'll have you on video some point, probably for some special episode. Pop the head in, just say hi to the folks, whatever. We can do something cool together from traveling around or do something. Maybe you could appear.
Hmm.
I'm doing something different rather than my, usual storytelling. So yeah, here we are once again. And this time we have another, because it's October, another spooky case. We're doing the theme of spooky for October. And this is a very creepy case. One that's truly bizarre. And weird. It's definitely one of the weirder ones. And it's the story of a guy named Christopher Case. Are you familiar?
Well, yeah, because I researched it.
Okay, so he did look into it. Okay, so he's totally familiar. All right, I was hoping this would be a surprise.
I'm not going in blind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is definitely one of those, stories with an all stranger than fiction ring to it. In fact, if you were to hear the story, you might think it's like a fake story or a movie. But it's not. This is a real story that actually happened. It technically doesn't involve a murder, but that really depends on what line you go down on. Because it was a story of a man who encountered a witch, and he later died. But just how was the witch that killed him, as he believed, it seemed like he truly believed, up until his death? Or, well, let's give it a go.
Let's do it. It was definitely the witch.
Yeah, I think it was the witch too. Let me set the scene for you folks at home. I just want you to imagine this, right? You're an officer with the Seattle Police Department, and you've been asked to respond to a call from a woman who is worried about her friend's well-being and has requested a welfare check, just to make sure, he's okay. She hadn't heard from him. So, you mosey on down to his apartment, and you give a knock on his apartment door. You don't get an answer. Okay, but, the apartment, it seems fine, nothing weird on the outside, it seems secure. Right, just leave it at that. Then, a couple of days later, still, no one has heard from the man since he made a worrying call to the same friend who'd asked the police to check on him in the first place. Now, it's been a couple of days, so it's time to force entry and make sure there's nothing untoward going on in there. People are really becoming worried about this guy and haven't heard anything from him since he made a very scary phone call. You get inside, and at first, in his apartment, things seem perfectly fine. Only then, you realize you hear something faint, a melody. Something like church organ music. While calling out to check if anyone is in the apartment and may need help, you notice there are some more little odd things strewn about. White powder is sprinkled around the edges of every room you enter and clear. On closer inspection, it appears to be some kind of kosher salt. Then, there are books littered around the place. It looks like the person who lived there was a little more than superstitious. There were books on sorcery and witchcraft strewn throughout the place, along with several burned down candles, and still no response from anyone. Finally, you enter the bathroom, and that's when you see something truly bizarre, something you will never forget. The walls are all lined with more kosher salt and 10 or so burned down candles. In the bathtub is the man you've been sent to check on. He's perfectly still. He's fully clothed. You call out to him, but you get no response. It becomes painfully obvious that life has left him sometime earlier. He's positioned on his knees, doubled over, and stone dead. There's no obvious cause of his death, no injuries, bruising, or blood on him. In fact, it would take an in-depth coroner's investigation to determine a cause of death, but we'll get to that later. Now, that might have sounded like the opening of a low-budget Seven-style horror movie, but it is the reality of how 35-year-old Christopher Robert Case's life came to an end.
When they seen the salt around the place, I'm sure they must have thought it was like drugs. I wonder if they did that whole, you know, the classic cop thing that they do in movies where, you know, they dip the old finger in, rub it on the gums, give an old taste test.
The good old thing that cops do in movies where they take drugs.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. That's grade A kosher salt right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You probably thought it was a bit of a devil's dandruff, bit of the El Schnachta lying around the place.
I don't know why movies keep doing it. There's not a chance that cops are tasting drugs.
No.
I hope they're not.
What comes to mind is the movie Goodfellas when, you know, he's in, it's towards the end of the movie when, you know, to find a bag of coke and a cop does it.
Yeah.
Puts the finger into the coke, puts it in his mouth and smiles.
Yeah.
Like he knows it's cocaine. He's like, why the fuck is a cop taking cocaine?
I know.
Yeah.
You know? Like, all the cops in the DEA are like, just like, guys, I am wired.
Yeah.
What the fuck are they putting in this cocaine?
They're all fucking scazzed out long. So, Christopher Case grew up in Richmond, Virginia. Christopher was a popular guy. He had no issue getting along with people. But he was most content when he was at home listening to music. That was his passion, music. Music of all kinds. After years of hard work, Christopher had managed to carve out a career as a radio DJ in North Carolina before finding work for a company producing background music. You know, like elevator music, no copyright stuff, that kind of thing. The kind of music that's meant to go unnoticed. Elevators and lobbies and that kind of thing. Corporate music. He was obviously very good at his job because after a few years, now in his early 30s, he found himself being headhunted by the big boys at a background music industry, Muzak. He was soon offered a position with them as their director of programming, a role that would still allow him to indulge his love of music while also paying a
hell of a good wage.
His new role as a music executive also came with a big old jump in geography, requiring Chris to move out to Seattle, Washington, a place very well known for its music scene, also well known for its rain.
Some of those background music jingles are bangers, though. Clicking along. I remember I was on hold to the bank one time, and it was just like, this is, like, they took their moment, whoever wrote that song. Yeah. It was good. It was really good. I'd nearly call back just to be on hold. Yeah, it was great.
I also love those, like, sound-alikes. Like, it sounds like a popular song, just different enough to not be, you know, to not be plagiarizing or, like, get into any copyright difficulties. That's my favorite. It's like, this is, like, one key down from, like, a Bruce Springsteen
song. It's like, I'm gonna see you.
Yeah. So, on April 11th, 1991, Chris, he was on a business trip in San Francisco, where he met an attractive woman with whom he quickly struck up a strong rapport, and the two discovered that they not only shared a love of music, but also of history, especially ancient Egyptian and Mediterranean civilizations, which is something Chris also enjoyed. Hey, history fanatic and music fanatic. Chris reveled in the woman's company, and they actually got quite close. Unfortunately, things went south very quickly when the woman made it very clear to Christopher that she wanted a little bit more than just a chat and a harmless flirting. She apparently was very subtle about it, and point blank asked Christopher, on several occasions, if he'd like to accompany her to the boudoir. Now, Chris was not the kind of guy to jump into bed with just anyone with a pulse. In fact, he was a little bit weirded out and thrown off by her intensity. She was coming on a little too strong for old Chris, so he tried to turn her down in the most gentleman-like possible. Despite his best intentions, the woman clearly felt scorned. And, well, you know that old saying. She definitely lived up to that. And having taken the rejection about as personally as was possible, she began to curse at Christopher. And when I say curse, I don't mean effing this and effing that. I mean she literally began to curse him. According to what Christopher told friends later, the woman told him repeatedly that she was a witch, and he'd regret not entertaining her for that night. He would come to regret it in the worst possible way.
Means no, witch.
That's it. But she was saying he will be dead within the week.
Oh my God. The fear of witches and curses is just, it's a really interesting one. I know we touched on it before in the Charles Walton episode.
Mm.
So in early history, magic, it was considered to be a power held by healers and shamans. However, this all changed in Europe during the medieval period when a new science, air quotes there, was established, the study of devils and demons, which was called demonology. Demonologists, they argued that witches was not just good magic gone bad. Instead, it was a career committed to wickedness against the church.
Ooh.
Then along came a real piece of shit by the name of Henrik Kramer. He was a clergyman who wrote the book Malleus Maleficarum. AKA The Hammer of Witches.
The Hammer of Witches. We talked about this, as you said, in the Charles Walton episode. I am endlessly fascinated by the Malleus Maleficarum.
Malleus Maleficarum.
Oh, it's so cool. Even the names. Okay, folks. We're going to do a deep dive on Malleus Maleficarum someday. I want to go through it. I am so interested in hearing about that. How it was written, what it was about, cases and stories. Oh, I can't wait.
And like the book, it's a type of guide on how to find and torture witches. It was called The Hammer of Witches because hammers were one of the tools that were used to torture accused witches.
Ooh, it's like a Gotterdammerung.
Yeah, they drive wedges into iron boots until the victim's legs were pulped.
Oof.
That's, yeah.
Not for me, folks.
Rough. But this guy, Henrik Kramer, he hated women. In the book, he explained that, so this is a quote, every evil is small compared to the evil of women.
This guy's like, I believe they have a word called incel these days for this guy.
Kramer, he started out as a monk and being celibate, he knew very little about actual real women. He imagined them being shallow, vain creatures, seductive and obsessed with sex and power. As you said, he's basically the worst type of incel there is today. He couldn't have sex and he blamed women for being so sexual.
But he chose to not. Like, he chose to be a monk. He chose to be celibate.
And he
still hated women.
Still hated women. He's like, he chose to be celibate and then was so angry at these women for being too sexual near him.
Oh, wow.
And then he wrote a book about it.
Right.
The book is madness, but it goes into detail about how witches set curses among men. Now, a lot of these curses and spells are to do with men not being able to get it up.
Okay.
It talks about how witches work with the devil, who can actually interpose himself invisibly between a man and a woman during procreation and cause an abortion or a sterility in a woman's womb. Or, most common of all, cause impotence or some sort of sexual dysfunction in men. Witches were eager to cast this kind of spell because they knew that if men could not perform sexually with their wives, then they would be more likely to submit to a witch's own adulterous embraces and have the man all to herself. With regards to a spell or curse that would kill a man, though, that is not something that would happen too often. At a glance or a word, witches, they could kill young poultry or pigs or the fetus of any animal. They could kill small children, they love that, and infants, both in the womb and at birth. But to kill a man, it was much harder.
It's a little bit above their pay grade.
Well, the reason was because men were, they were like of a higher class.
Yeah.
And they were under God's.
It's true.
And they were under God's special protection. And they were never bewitched.
True. Of course. True. This is all ding, ding, ding. Yes.
So for this witch to put a curse on the death of Christopher Case, she must have been a pretty powerful witch indeed.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That's what Christopher was thinking. Well, actually, that's not what Christopher was thinking. What Christopher was thinking when she began, he turned her down and said, no, I'm not going to bang you, essentially. You're coming a little bit strong and he's probably smelling the crazy offer. She began cursing at him, casting spells, shouting all this weird shit. So Christopher was thinking, all right, well, lucky escape for this lad. What a crazy bitch. But otherwise then he was like, all right, he didn't really think about it again after he left. Now, Christopher wasn't one for superstitions. He didn't really care for that kind of thing. He wasn't a supernatural guy. He wasn't interested in superstitions, witch curses. He just thought she was fucking off a rocker, whatever. Not that he had anything against it, like he wasn't anti-superstitious or supernatural, it just wasn't something he leaned towards. He was more of a rational explanations kind of guy, scientific explanation for all this stuff. So the woman's threats to curse him wasn't taken to heart. Christopher simply carried on as usual and returned to his home in Seattle the next day as he planned. Once he got back, he made a call to his friend, Sammy Suter. He told her the whole escapade and in turn, Sammy also laughed the threats off and simply thought it was more odd, what a weirdo, than anything serious. So the whole thing was filed away in the recesses of Christopher's mind, destined to be one of those stories he would tell drunkenly, hey, get a load of this woman I met up with. He would tell parties, nothing more than that. He thought little of it, continued to live his life. That was until the night of April 13th, 1991. 2 days later, when things suddenly took a very dark turn. According to a phone call Christopher made the next morning to Sammy, his close friend, he had been kept awake all night by the sound of voices whispering somewhere in his home. He'd even searched to see if he could find the source of the noises and some kind of rational reason, but he couldn't find anything that could be mistaken for the sound he had definitely heard. He went on to tell Sammy that he'd also been sure he'd seen shadows moving in the apartment and had this consuming feeling that someone was watching him. Now again, it's important to remember, Christopher didn't believe in curses, spooky, supernatural stuff, but he was literally on the phone to one of his best friends in a blind panic over shadows and voices. For him to even mention this in passing, let alone in such great detail to a friend, and whether he saw or heard anything actually or not, he was convinced that he had experienced something weird and unnatural. Now Sammy on the phone to him went through, right, your usual list of explanations. He'd been dreaming, you'd been half asleep, sleep paralysis, anything. Find out an explanation, calm him down, but he was truly freaked out. Eventually, Christopher was able to calm himself down, you know, took his mind off the previous sleepless night.
When you mentioned that he had seen shadows moving in the apartment, that was the first thing I thought of was sleep paralysis.
Keith has experienced sleep paralysis numerous times.
Recently as well.
Recently?
Like, yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
Wow. I mean, we've talked about your sleep paralysis before. I don't think on the podcast. Or maybe briefly on the podcast.
I think
but
we briefly mentioned it during the... what was that vampire? Rod Ferrell?
Kind of briefly mentioned. Rod Ferrell episode,
yeah,
right.
Briefly mentioned during that. There was a time there where I had sleep paralysis a lot.
Really?
Then it kind of went away for a while. But yeah, 2 weeks ago, with sleep paralysis again. And yeah, it's terrifying.
Really?
Like, you wake up in the middle of the night. And for me, what happens, obviously, you wake up, can't move, feels like you're wide awake. I have someone on my chest. It's like, it's kind of what you expect with sleep paralysis. It's woman in white with long hair. Kind of like The Ring. You know,
you see a woman sitting on your chest, like The Ring?
On my chest, screaming at me. I'm
just,
can't move.
And you can hear her?
Yeah, it feels real. Like, and I can't,
she's like,
can't get over, like, yeah, screaming. I mean,
God, this is absolutely fucking terrifying.
And like, as well, like the shadow, I've seen shadow people as well. Not just when I'm sleeping, but like awake during the day.
Really?
It's weird. It's like it's kind of like you see the shadow of a figure in the corner of your eye, but as soon as you look, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. That happens not as often, but every now and again, I'll see, just be gone about my day, and then I'll see what I think is like someone in the house, and I was like, oh, and I look and gone. I was like, oh, I thought I'd seen someone.
Dude, but this is scary. This is terrifying. I've never had that.
I think if you've never experienced it before, like if this is the first time that Christopher had, like if he'd never had sleep paralysis before, and like after 2 days of a witch saying that she's going to curse him and he'd be dead within a week, if he had sleep paralysis for the first time, it is terrifying.
Yeah.
And I can see why it'd be so scary after 2 days when the witch said they're going to curse you, you start seeing this shit. If it was,
yeah.
It's at the time, at, like during it, it's very scary.
Yeah. And how do you get yourself out of it?
You kind of have to just, It's like small movements. I'm trying to like because obviously you can't move, so I kind of start trying to move like my fingers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's my wife, she'll wake me up. She'll have to shake me
yeah.
a couple times trying to get me out of it. But yeah, it's trying to do it with like small movements with separate fingers, the hands, and you kind of shake yourself out a little bit. It's weird, kind of when it's happening, it feels like you're in it for a long time. But yeah, it started off when I was in college.
Yeah.
When I started trying to do, one of my friends was really big into lucid dreaming.
Right.
Do you know the whole thing with lucid dreaming where you're meant to look at your hand throughout the day?
Mm-hmm.
Because your hands don't look like your hands in dreams.
Right.
So when you're dreaming, you just get in the habit of looking at your hand throughout the day.
Okay.
And then when you're dreaming, you look at your hand, but it doesn't look like your hand. And then you go, oh shit, I'm dreaming.
Okay.
And you go, I'm going to go fly.
Yeah.
And that's meant to be great. So he was doing this and he was doing lucid dreaming. He had a great time. And then I was like, oh, I want to try this. So I was trying it and then it just... I didn't have lucid dreaming. I just went straight into like sleep paralysis.
Yeah,
and
so went straight to nightmare.
Something just like kicked in from there. And since college, it just kind of a semi-regular thing throughout
wow.
my life now.
For wow.
It's like, what age am I now? 33, like 13 years now.
Man. And you only get it when you're sleeping on your back, right?
I always wake up my back. So
okay.
Like I always, I don't go to sleep on my
You probably
back
turned or something.
For fear of having sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
I usually go to sleep on my side, but I'll wake up on my back with sleep paralysis.
Yeah. Man, that's terrifying. So. Jeez, well, there you go, folks. That's scary shit. The piece Sammy gave Christopher calming him down didn't last for long, though, at all. And on the morning of the 16th, Sammy got another call from Christopher, and he was even more frantic than before. This call got Sammy a lot more worried about Chris's state of mind. Christopher told Sammy that he'd woken up in the middle of the night and had been completely unable to move. Not only that, but Christopher was also being strangled. Only Christopher was completely alone. There was no one there with him. Yet, he could feel hands around his throat, cutting off his oxygen. As he struggled against whatever the force was, it became so strong that it managed to lift him into the air and forcibly shove him back down onto the bed before finally letting go. It took a few moments for Christopher to be able to get his breath back and gather himself. Once he'd regained his focus, he noticed there were dark patches on his bed sheets. So he turned the light on, and now he could see these little dark patches were actually deep blood red stains. And lifting up his hands, he quickly realized that each of the fingers had tiny cuts on the tips. Now obviously Sammy was very worried about Christopher's health and safety. She calmed him down again and had Christopher promise to call her back later. Christopher tried his best to not return to the panicked state, and he tried to go about his day as normal as possible, but this had truly upset him. So he paid a visit to a religious bookstore called Evangel Incorporated. Now, it's very much worth reiterating, this was so out of character for Christopher, who would have been, you know, the very last type of person who would resort to that. He was not a guy that would ever look into the supernatural as being anything at all, but it was so obvious that this bizarre and terrifying nighttime assault had truly freaked him out. Whatever had happened, Christopher had seemingly done a complete 180 and now truly feared that something was haunting him. On his visit to the bookstore, Christopher walked straight over to a display and grabbed a whole handful of crucifixes.
Oh yeah, any religious bookstore worth its salt has at least one display of crucifixes.
Of course, yeah, yeah. According to the owner of the store, Rodney Higuchi, Christopher was calm and reasonable on his first visit. On his second visit, though, Rodney noticed a very clear difference in his demeanor and went over to ask Chris if he needed help with anything. Christopher told him he needed help in fighting a paranormal entity that had been attacking him. Rodney helped him pick out several books on witchcraft and wizardry and all that sort of stuff. So Christopher gathered notes, psyched himself up for what he clearly believed was a battle for his very soul. Armed with his new knowledge of fighting curses and the paranormal, he returned home and prepared the place with candles, salt, and crucifixes, just as the books had told him to do.
The use of salt is an interesting one, and it's one that's been used in folk magic around the world for centuries. In parts of Germany, Normandy and Scotland, salt was used in and around a butter churn to keep witches from souring the butter or harming the cow from which the cream was obtained. Irish folk remedies included the use of salt combined with saying the Lord's Prayer, of course, to cure those who might have been fairy struck. A similar story comes from Bavaria and the Ukraine, in which salt was used to determine if a child was bewitched.
Ah.
Egyptian caravans setting out on journeys across the desert used to perform rituals that involved the burning of salt on hot coals. And this was done to ensure that evil spirits wouldn't get in the way of their travels. This is still sort of used today with the use of black salt or witch's salt.
Okay.
To make it, it's basically ashes, sea salt, black salt, activated charcoal and some herbs. And it's used for protection, for getting rid of negativity. So the same way that burning sage around a house is used.
Right. Okay.
Salt can also be used to detect the presence of witches.
Ooh.
So it's believed that witches don't eat much salt. So if someone complains about the food being too salty, just need to be burned for complaining about your cooking.
Yes. Hey, that's good. That's good. Very nice. Very nice.
Interestingly, the old salt magic beliefs, they still do carry over in today's society as well. So I'm sure you've heard of, when someone spills the salt, it's considered bad luck.
Yeah.
It's considered bad luck as well to lend salt to someone because if you lend it, it can lead to a feud. So yeah. There you go, for anyone wondering why Christopher was seasoning his house with salt. He wasn't. It was because he believed it had a magical protective tool, which has been used for hundreds of years, which witches hate, apparently.
Yeah, and he was truly believed a witch was haunting him. And the night of the 16th would be his most harrowing experience yet. Though we don't know exactly what happened to him that evening, but we know it scared him so much he left his home and booked himself into a hotel where he stayed the rest of the night. Something truly horrifying had happened in his apartment. The next morning, Chris went to visit a Catholic priest for help. According to the priest, Father James Malahan, he was disturbed by Christopher's physical condition and extremely concerned for the young man's well-being. Father Malahan said Christopher told him he could feel something evil around him and he was terrified that it was going to kill him. This is when Sammy, having failed to get a hold of Christopher by phone, obviously very worried, she was the one who called the Seattle Police Department and asked them to perform a welfare check. Obviously, with Christopher at a hotel, there was no answer when he first arrived and knocked on the door. The responding officers did notice a line of white powder lining the front doorway, but otherwise the place seemed secure and nothing out of place, so they left, and they let Sammy know things seemed okay. Sammy was concerned, but she was all the way in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and so there was little else she could do other than simply wait it out. After what seemed like forever, Sammy got a message from Christopher on her answering machine.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Do you want to listen to it, actually?
Yeah, I haven't heard it.
Okay, here is it for me and Keith to listen to.
Hi, Sammy. This is Christopher. Well, they just about got me. You know, they are trying to kill me. So whatever it is I do to defend myself doesn't work anymore. This is what it's coming down to. I'm not looking forward to tonight. It's serious. It's very serious. It's my life.
There you go. That's the call.
He seems to really just accept it.
Yeah, that's the thing in the call. He just seems very accepting of his fate. He does sound kind of scared, but he seems like just resigned. It's almost like he knows there's just nothing he can do. This is it for me. The weirdest thing about the message was the complete 180 in the emotion of Christopher's voice. The earlier conversations had been almost frantic, marked by heavy breathing and a breaking, creaking voice. Now Chris seemed completely relaxed and normal. Yet, what he was actually saying was just as terrifying as everything he'd already said. He was, as we said, completely resigned to his fate. Whatever happened to him that night, we will never know for sure, though there's no shortage of speculation, of course. The police came in, they found him, doubled over in his bathtub, surrounded by candles and salt, and he was dead. The official listed cause of death on the coroner's report was acute myocarditis, which basically means his heart went bye-bye. And we have no idea why it did that. Christopher was just 35 years old. He was quite obsessive about fitness. He was dedicated to his regime and to looking after himself. So the idea of sudden heart failure might sound crazy, but it does happen from time to time. A lot of you have probably heard about myocarditis. It's been blamed for a lot of people who've died from COVID. But it can affect healthy people randomly, always has. Christopher being an avid health junkie, but maybe it's just one of those things that just happened to him. Did he scare himself to death? You know, I've heard that people who are about to have a heart attack and stroke, they do have this growing feeling of dread in the time leading up to it.
I've heard that as well. Yeah, it's kind of like their body telling them.
Yeah, something's seriously wrong. Maybe that's what Christopher died of. He was manifesting his body telling him that your heart is in trouble. Who knows what happened to Christopher? Did he die of a witch's curse? Surrounding himself in his apartment? Well, let's get into some theories about what really happened. The mysterious fate of Christopher Curse. Christopher Case. Who was cursed? Yeah. Christopher's friends strongly disagreed with the officially stated cause of death. Acute myocarditis. Sammy Suter, who was probably the closest to Christopher and definitely had most contact with him during those final days, has a very different opinion. Despite believing in the paranormal herself and even offering her services as a psychic, Sammy doesn't believe it was anything supernatural that killed her friend of 10 years. Rather, she believes Christopher literally scared himself to death. That the idea of a witch's curse was so strong and connected with something primal in the depths of Christopher's mind, and it just took root. Eventually, that little suggestion of a mystical threat took on a life of its own. I suppose it's like the extreme version of those horror movies where someone is cursed and then they just end up dying. You know, the best horror movies are ones that make you think and you end up scaring yourself rather than ones that just jump scare you. Maybe that's exactly what happened to Christopher Case. This woman, this witch, was just so pissed off at him. She made up these curses to try and scare him to death, and his own psychology just took over and finished him off, did the rest. Maybe he really did just get himself so worked up that his heart gave out. Adrenaline is a hell of a drug. There's a lot of people, including those close to Christopher and the investigation, that think fright could have been a contributing factor to him. Perhaps he did suffer with myocarditis, like a ticking time bomb, and the added stress of the witch's threats pushed him over the edge. After all, we know that broken heart syndrome is a real thing. If the stress of heartbreak and extreme sadness can have that effect on someone, then there's no doubt a serious and especially prolonged fight could also do it. Experts admit that there isn't a measurement for the amount of adrenaline released in response to stressful events, and what those events are, the trigger surge, are varied from person to person. Obviously, responses can be trained over time, but Christopher was a normal guy who'd never considered he'd be worried about supernatural curses. That could very well be a part of the reason that the seed took hold of his mind. Which leads into the next contributing factor, Chris's mental health. Obviously, when the healthy young man was found suddenly deceased, one consideration was suicide. But from what Christopher was telling his friends, the last thing he wanted was to end his own life. He was desperate to survive. If it really was a matter of Chris's mind manifesting imagery so frightening that it killed him, it's worth taking a look at the idea of hysteria, right? I think most known cases are usually ones of so-called mass hysteria, when an idea spreads among a group of friends, a group of people, and sometimes just from a suggestion, multiple people, sometimes dozens at a time, manifest real physical symptoms in response to this suggestion. There's been some very well-documented cases, like the Dancing Plague of 1815, when a large group of people, between 15 and 400, depending on the account, in the town of Strasbourg, started dancing, literally could not stop. With several of the afflicted eventually dancing themselves to death, and apparently all that started from a woman named Frau Topfer, who began dancing non-stop, and eventually more and more people just kept joining in till they died. Several from heart attacks and exhaustion. But one of the other most famous cases of mass hysteria is also the Salem Witch Trials, which links in pretty heavily here, when many people genuinely believed that their neighbors could, in fact, be witches. You only have to look at the terms, you know, placebo and nocebo. You know, inert medications given in controlled studies, yielding results not far from the actual active versions of them. Just because the recipient is led to believe they have been given the real thing, and your brain, your psychology, your physiology does the rest.
It is amazing, the power of human emotions. As you mentioned earlier, people, they've died of heartbreak and also of fright, but there have also been recorded incidents of cases dying from joy.
Really?
As well, yeah. In 2008, there was a case in Ravenna, Michigan, where a guy just dropped dead after a perfect game of bowling. So on the 16th of October, he threw his first 300 game, gave all of his friends a high five, and then just dropped dead.
Oh wow, that sucks.
It just goes to show how powerful human emotions can be. Another theory was she was actually a witch that put a curse on him.
That is very, very true. Like, a mystery just as big as the cause of death is who this woman he met in San Francisco was. And we know very little about her, just that another male colleague had apparently introduced them, and the woman worked in a similar field to Christopher. He did tell Sammy that she was around 15 to 20 years older than him, which would put her mid-40s, early 50s, and despite him rejecting her, she apparently was really good looking. Christopher just wasn't interested in jumping in bed with a random woman he barely knew, but outside of those few details, no one knows who this mysterious witch was.
No one
or
knows.
Or is. Maybe she's still out there cursing away to this very day.
You did mention that at the beginning that they shared a love of music, but also of history and ancient Egyptian. The Egyptians, they loved their old curses. There was always 9 victims of the old King Tut curse in 1922. It was a team of researchers led by a British archaeologist, Howard Carter, when he discovered the entrance to the king. When King Tut's tomb itself was unearthed in November 26, 1922, after more than 3,000 years, some believe the pharaoh unleashed a powerful curse of death and destruction.
He did.
Upon all of who dared disturb his eternal slumber. A number of people involved uncovering the tomb died in mysterious circumstances or had a series of bad fortune.
The curse of Tutankhamun was always something that fascinated me. I know it's bullshit, but it's like a lot of people did die who were involved in the discovery of his tomb, but it's like the deaths are all like completely separate and related. Like, there was nothing terribly unnatural about how any of these people died. But it's a cool story because I just love The Mummy.
Yeah.
I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
But
loosely linked to this.
Yeah, exactly. We're just trying to tie it
up. Grasping the straws
at
that one.
I just want to talk about The Mummy. That's it. But it's a weird story, the story of Christopher Case. The man who believed he was cursed by a witch died a grisly death. You know, I can just, like, it's also just a terrifying story. No matter what happened, like, obviously he killed, not killed himself, but, you know, I don't think there was an actual wish, but, like, to imagine what he was going through in his final moments is absolutely terrifying. Like,
he was also so scared, like.
Yeah, in the bathroom where there was candles and salt, like, naked in the bathtub, on his knees.
Was he naked?
Oh, I don't know if he's naked.
I think you had that in yourself.
Okay, yeah. He was naked, his dick was hanging out. Well, he, no, it said when I was, you know, it said he was in the bathroom. I just assumed. Okay. Well, he was flowing through it. But, you know, just the idea of that, like, you know, is terrifying. That his last moments would have been like that, like scared literally to death.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, scary S-H-I-T-E. That's what I say to that, my friend.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so ends that story. A bit of a spooky tale for H-Sween.
That's it.
Queen.
Don't get too scared, guys.
Nah, don't indeed.
Boop!
Yeah, fuck you. All right. Thank you so much for listening. It means the world to me and Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to say? Keith, final words.
You does final... Do you have any final words?
Nah, just, you know, thanks for listening. Appreciate you. Hope you're all having a good day. Good October. Good year, good life.
Ditto. There we go.
Yeah, oh, fuck you, dude. All right, well, here you're listening. Thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
See ya.
All right, you guys have been great. Thanks, bye.
That was deep.
Thank you.